The Postal Service is facing a daunting task. In the wake of this fall's deadly anthrax attacks, postal officials are trying to figure out how to protect their workers and maintain public confidence in the service. It's a matter of weighing benefits and risks. As NPR's Richard Harris reports, it's also a matter of cost.
More than most people, Jack Estes knows just how much is at stake as the Postal Service figures out how to protect itself against bioterrorism. Protecting workers is paramount. So is protecting the public. But Estes, who represents a group of small business mailers, says maintaining the public confidence is almost as important.
If it's not safe, then people won't use it. And when they don't use it, then the Postal Service will have serious problems.
Businesses that depend on the mail could suffer untold losses. But ask Estes or anyone else how much safety is enough, and you can't get a solid answer. He says it really comes down to perceptions.
And in a sense, it's like airline security. You're never totally safe, but you want to be certain that everything is being done that can be done.
The first thing the Postal Service needs to do is identify what sorts of things they can conceivably do, whether it's irradiate mail, install germ detectors everywhere, even start issuing stamps that are encoded so they can be tracked back to the person who purchased them. The inevitable next question is how much these measures would cost. Estimates for some are in the billions. Martin Meltzer, the senior health economist at the National Center for Infectious Diseases at the CDC, says coming up with those numbers is just the start.
The pricing of it is just the baby steps. The pricing is what the green eye shade approach, which is the accounting, which is very important. Taxpayers always have the right to know what it's going to cost. But the returns, why they should do it, involves probabilities.
Tough questions like what's the probability of another attack? What's the probability that the measures you've chosen will really work? And that's just half the equation. Meltzer says the other half is calculating the benefit you'd get from any one of these steps.
Doing a complete and comprehensive economic analysis is a non-trivial task, particularly when you say, look, one of the main reasons we're doing it is for the intangibles. Let's face it, in the case of mail, everybody gets first-class mail. So how do you value the risks and benefits of picking up the mail and saying it's safe for me to open it?
It is possible to make a rough calculation of that by asking people how much they'd be willing to spend for more peace of mind. Economists could also take a stab at figuring out the economic impact if people lost confidence in the mail system. Meltzer says those answers don't come quickly.
It would take at least 12 months of very intensive work to even get preliminary results, and up to 2 years in my experience before you had hard-nosed results. And in the meantime, of course, people have expectations that something has to be done now.
One way to deal with the here and now is to approach the problem the way lawmakers approach spending on defense. Granger Morgan, head of the Department of Engineering and Public Policy at Carnegie Mellon University, says defense spending goes up and down in response to changes in perceived threats and needs, not because anyone can show that the spending is cost-effective. Morgan says there are ways to increase the chances that the funding will be useful.
We could look for dual-use opportunities. For example, maybe there are some things that get us both more security and at the same time help us solve other important social problems.
For example, if the nation beefed up its ability to detect all diseases quickly, that could dramatically reduce the impact of another attack through the mail. Most germ warfare deaths can be avoided if the infections are caught quickly enough. Morgan says it's also important to ask if you're going to spend billions of dollars on the Postal Service, if that's really the best use of our always limited resources.
Society faces lots of other problems, including lots of other terror risks, and we don't want to gold plate one system while ignoring others.
Of course, the Post Office can't wait for answers to emerge from this theoretical debate. Immediately after the anthrax letter attack, the Postal Service's first response was to sterilize some mail by beaming it with radiation. But drawbacks of that approach are now becoming more evident. It's costly, it slows the mail, and it can damage things sent through the mail. So other options are starting to emerge. Congressman Henry Waxman of California, the ranking Democrat on the Government Oversight Committee, says that's a good thing.
I think the Postal Service is placing too much emphasis on irradiating the mail and not enough emphasis on reducing the anonymity of the mail.
If every letter and package could be identified and traced back to its sender, Waxman suggests that would serve as a deterrent and reduce the likelihood of another attack. Ultimately, decisions about how to fund these steps and how much to spend will probably be made not at the Postal Service, but at the White House and in Congress. Waxman says so far his colleagues in Congress have been focusing on the potential risk to their own offices.
We have all our mail being irradiated, and then as an extra precaution, all our mail is also being quarantined for 24 hours while additional anthrax tests are being done. And all this is being done at the expense of the taxpayers. But for ordinary Americans, we're refusing to give the post office funds to take the steps necessary to protect the American people from dangers in the mail.
The fight brewing on Capitol Hill is not just how much money to spend, but who will pay, taxpayers or postal customers. And that depends on whether the problem is ultimately cast as one of national defense or one that protects the business of the Postal Service. Richard Harris, NPR News, Washington.